name is Lou Hartman, forgiveness and culture witnessing. When we talk about forgiveness and culture witnessing, basically in forgiveness, you need to have something to forgive somebody for before you start forgiving. Just like when we're talking about, I love everybody. There really needs to be something to love folks for, kind of a thing. So what I'd like to back into the forgiveness thing this morning by talking about loss. And everybody in the room have experienced some kind of loss. Something has been taken away from you, either through natural causes or through unnatural causes, and whatever unnatural causes might be. Maybe somebody broke in your home and wrecked it in the room. Maybe somebody stole your wallet on vacation. You might have been the bank, American Express commercial, you know, where they rip you off and you, all this kind of stuff. But we all have lost some things in life. And there seem to be some very natural reactions to loss. And some of those reactions fall in this category. First, you experience the loss. We can even define loss as a physical or emotional hurt. Loss of dignity, loss of pride, loss of good feelings about ourselves. Whether we define it in a physical or non-physical term, it doesn't matter, it's a loss. And the normal progression is you lose something, you experience frustration, frustration turns into anger, and for most good Christian folks, anger turns into guilt, and we have a problem. Because if guilt is not dealt with, it does what? To the individual. It's like eating. If the body does not process that food you're taking in and get rid of some of it, what happens to you?
You get sick.
No, before you get sick.
You blow up.
You blow up, and then you get sick. Some of us know about that. But guilt is the same way. When that guilt gets into us, we have to let it out in some form or another. Now, some of us, because we've been so conditioned about what appropriate behavior is, we internalize that guilt. And when you internalize that guilt, you attack yourself. And we know a lot of people that walks around who's very depressed all the time. Running to the doctor, pick on the doctor again. Running to the doctor and he can't figure out what's wrong with you. There's no medical reason for your condition. But yet I hurt. Yet I feel bad all the time. Oftentimes, I contend as results of some kind of loss that hasn't been appropriately dealt with. We lead into depression. And at the extreme, self-destruction, suicide. And we do that in a lot of ways. On the other hand, we have elements of our society, and maybe some of you in this room, you decide, hey, I'm too good to hurt myself. Or I'm too afraid of dying, and I hate pain, so I won't inflict it upon me. I hurt bad enough already. So what I will do, I will act out. And I have some kind of outward expression. I'll attack society. A lot of the bullies that we have in school and in politics and whatnot are people that are hurting. And they're striking out, trying to get some relief. This guilt that we was hurt, it's built up in us. Trying to find some way. And unfortunately, there is no relief in a long-term manner by striking out like this. So it's dangerous to internalize it. It's dangerous to attack others. So what's left for those of us who intend to live a long time and take advantage of all the things that Ryan talked about this morning, you know, getting the fiber in your diet and all this kind of good stuff, is to find a new behavior.
Lay it off on somebody else.
No, we're gonna do a new behavior. We're gonna do a new behavior. Because we all are good Christian folks, right? And when the Lord comes, we want him to say what?
Yeah.
What were we saying again when he's gonna come? That's right, you guys are not cogent folks, huh? You're Lutherans. Well done, done that good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful of a few things. Rise up, and I'll make you rule over many. What's wrong with that? That acceptance, that mission, that we're to be pleased with us. So we can't turn it on to ourselves, because the end result is depression, suicide, inflicting hurt on yourself. God is not pleased with that. We can't attack our neighbor, our spouses, and our children. We have all kinds of illustrations of abuse in our society. God is not pleased with that. So we have to find a new behavior. And for many of us, that new behavior has to come in the form of forgiveness. Which is often one of the most difficult things to do. Now, yesterday when I was browsing around, no, that's not true. Monday when I was going through the orientation process, someone was given a copy of this book, which is in the library, costs $1.50. When you add tax to that, it's $1.61. And I hope they charge you the same amount they charge me, so I won't have to pick at the store. But it fits right into the concept of forgiveness and culture witnessing to me, because it begins to talk about how people like yourselves acquired the land, such as the land that we are enjoying so much right here at Holden Village. To whom did it belong to initially?
The Indians.
Well, if we really take it back to the final analysis, and if we are honest, it still belongs to him today.
Right.
But to whom did he entrust it to initially?
Native
Americans. The Indians. How did the other guys get it? Now let me make a point of clarification. I'm not picking on you today, okay? But I'm gonna talk in terms of black and white. And it's obvious why I'm gonna talk in terms of black and white, right? I'm black and you're white. That's just, you know. And so today I'm gonna represent one side of the picture. And you're going to represent the other. No need to talk about somebody who's around the corner or out in Timbuktu. We are here. And the concept is for us to identify and for us to reaffirm or make changes in our lives. So that's what it's all about. So when I talk in terms of black and white, maybe I am being racist and maybe I'm not being racist, but the goal is for us to personally reflect and internalize and look for some affirmations of behaviors that are already operating in your life that are positive and it's pleasing with God, or identify new behaviors. Most of the wealth in America was accomplished through the same kind of means that the people who own the land today acquired it from the original owners. There's been a lot of deception, a lot of hurt, a lot of inappropriate behavior. Hopefully not by you specifically, but by your forefathers and mothers. And as a result, you have reaped some of the benefits of their inappropriate behavior. As a result, there's a lot of anger and hostility directed at you by whom?
You.
Yeah, me. That's right. Is that anger and hostility justifiable?
Yes.
Why?
Because we're still angry and hostile toward you. And we don't know why either.
True. So true. There's a lot of fear on both sides. And it's a lot of, and I'll keep using this phrase, being good Christian people. You know you're not supposed to be angry and hostile, right?
Right.
Right.
You know you're not supposed to be fearful. God is not a God of fear. Right?
Right.
Therefore, you feel guilty about it. And as opposed to making really changes in our lives, we start giving handouts and band-aids and placating situations, but not really dealing with what's hurting. The principle I like to share with us today is applicable not only in cultural witnessing, but it's applicable in personal relationships. Many of us in our families, we have been hurt and hurt so dearly. And there's a lot of guilt associated with that. A lot of us have taken extremist role in terms of Christianity when our families are not Christians. And as opposed to loving and nurturing and being able to witness to our family, every time we open our mouths about God and Christianity, we turn our family off. And Christ is love, and love is a magnet that should draw. But we're not drawing. And I'd like to suggest to you that one of the reasons we may not be drawing has to do with the fact that we haven't exercised forgiveness. What is forgiveness, anybody?
Forgetting.
Okay, forgetting.
Allowing.
Reconciling.
Not being hung up mentally over what somebody does. Allowing them to be what they are. In your own mind, and not being hung up with what they do.
Anybody else?
The restoring process.
Expand on that a little bit more.
Well, in a Christian sense, forgiveness is restoring what used to be, a relationship that used to be there that over time has been destroyed because of a number of things, and it's restoring that to its previous wholeness.
Okay. One more person.
I think it's letting go. Letting go of your feelings or your anger.
Letting go of your feelings, your anger. Okay. I get carried away, so to keep me on.
It's putting away a debt.
Putting away a debt. Okay. I get carried away, so I have notes today. I don't always have notes, but I need to stay on track because we only have 55 minutes. Forgiveness is giving up our claim to retaliation or resentment against an offender, which encompasses the kind of things that you shared with. There has to be a real hurt in order for our forgiveness to be applicable. You have to have a right to avenge in order for forgiveness to take place. Who is the prime example for us in terms of forgiveness?
Jesus.
What did he do?
On the cross. Forgiving.
What did he forgive us for?
Killing him.
Even before that.
Unbelief or ignorance.
Let me back up. When we were saying on the cross for our sins, what were
he
forgave us before he went to the cross? What did he forgive us for initially? And don't be so generic in our sins, be a little more specific. For our disobedience in the garden. Now, God desired for us to have a perfect, like commodity meal, relationship with him, and we blew it. He wanted to have fellowship with us, and we blew it. That was the beginning. And in spite of that, all the work that God had done in setting the perfect setting. It's almost like when some of you create the best possible dinner you can. I mean, all of the right foods, all of the atmosphere is just perfect. And then the person who you've done it for comes in with an ungrateful attitude. You want to take the turkey and just beat him side the head. That's what we did to God initially. We blew it. We offended him. We hurt him. And there's evidence in the scriptures that he was hurt. What did he do?
Cry.
Yeah. And then he took action. He drove us out. And some of y'all have been suffering ever since. But God is the example of forgiveness. And he forgave, and he is forgiving us. The next example is that, like God, we need to practice the same thing. However, we are not like God, so we don't see everything. We are not all knowledgeable, so we are not in touch with some of the hurt and some of the anguish that that has been brought to us and that we've caused. When we think in terms of, and I doubt very seriously when you go out to witness to people who are different ethnically from you, that you think in terms of all of the hurt that has been inflicted over the years. Yesterday, when in the evening session, in the morning session, Ryan session, when he opened up the magazine, the Time magazine, the Ebony, whatever it was, and they had the scene of the hanging scene in the room, that, oh my God. I'm sure you're not in touch with that when you go out to witness it. But you know, when the children of Israel crossed over successfully towards the promised land, and in the last division of the property, there were 2.5 tribes that were the last ones to get their part of the property, and they were admonished to build a monument when they got crossed over successfully. And they were admonished to build a monument so that when their kids see the monument, they will ask questions about what happened, what does it stand for, and then they'd have an opportunity to tell them all that God had done for them. Well, unfortunately, in our society, our parents have monuments of all the sin that we have committed. And we pass these messages on to our kids. And we perpetuate the hurt. We perpetuate the anguish. So even though I was not a slave, even though I was not brought over on the board, even though on down the line, even though you were not slave owners, even though you did not inflict some of the, our generations are reaping the world with. So when you come to me and you say, Lou, do you know Jesus? And I say, no. One of the first one thing I want to know, who are you to tell me about Jesus? Because I haven't forgiven you. And in most cases, with all of your generosity and love and concern and humility and desire to please God and do God's work, and you come to me, I strip you immediately of all that good stuff that you came with. And you begin to feel kind of empty because you came with good intentions, and I shot you down. I lashed out at you with all of this garbage that's been inside of me all this time. And what does that do to you?
You're laying it off on somebody else.
I just triggered all of the unfinished business inside of you. And then you're going to make me listen to you if you're a really good evangelist. You're not going to give up, right? You're going to get kind of, you're an unusual evangelist. But most of us really good evangelists, we're going to be persistent. But we're going to get more and more and more emotional in the process. And more hurt in the process. At some point, we need to acknowledge the hurt that has been caused and passed on to these people and forgive them for their present behavior. Jesus said, for they know not what they do. They're doing what they're doing ignorantly. They're doing it because they hurt. And because they hurt, they need me. Not me as Lou Horton, but me as God's instrument in this particular situation to minister to them. So a key element in the forgiveness process is seeing yourself as a ministering agent of God. In spite of the fact that the person is not initially receptive, in spite of the fact that the person is emotionally attacking you, when you see yourself as a ministering agent of God, you'll be able to persist with the right what? Attitude. You'll be able to persist without internalizing all of this hurt and anguish that that person is dumping out. Which is very difficult. Why? Because you're human. Now, sometimes we claim and say, God said we're supposed to love, and because I'm a Christian, I love everybody, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da, but we're still human. And so we have a lot of stuff to work through. So the forgiveness process is an ongoing process. It's a renewing, but someone talked about restoration of it. It's a renewing process. But it's something that we have to continuously do so that we can continue to be renewed and be in a state of ministry, being able to minister to other folks. There are lots of scriptures that reinforce what we're talking about. God himself is the only one who can really teach us how to love. That's just a fact. By nature, we are not loving folks. Some in some churches, we really don't teach love. We teach self-preservation. If they hurt you, come back into the fold, and then we'll just have reasons for staying within our own little group and taking care of our nurse because they don't want us anyway. And we not, the scriptures say if they reject you, you do what? You shake the dust from off your feet and you turn your back and you go the other way. But there's some other scriptures that propels us to continue to work and minister to God. But we take the easy way out. Only God can give us the energy, the desire, the attitude. And the only way that we can stay in touch with him in that respect is the process of forgiving people for their sins, large and great. And we do it in the same fashion that God, through Christ, did it for us. There are lots of scriptures we want to hear. Some of the things that keeps us from doing this is, one is, we call it in the religious world, self-righteousness. And self-righteousness stems from an attitude of pride. A prideful man will not respect the forgiveness of God. It's really difficult. A prideful man will not be able to forgive others because you deserve it. You robbed my house, so you deserve to be shot. A prideful man will not be able to admit his sins to another so that they can forgive them. Immediately, when the sin of self-righteousness swells up in us, when we are attempting to witness and minister to somebody else, and that person latch into that, and we get into this tug-of-war battle, we need to ask that person for forgiveness. A real humbling experience for you, and guess what? For the other person as well. You're the model. So when you get to the point of letting them know that they need to forgive and turn loose all of this old garbage, you've already modeled the way to do it. And believe me, the old adage, I don't know how old it is, but my mom used to say it to us all the time. Monkey see,
monkey do.
Monkey do. And there's a lot of truth to that. Most people learn more through OJT when you come to a practical application of things than they do in the classroom. You know, I get a lot of professionals that they have their certificate and they come in for a job and they're being hired. And then we have to train them to do what they have been educated to do. Pick on the doctors again. After you get out of school, what do you have to do?
Internship.
For how long?
1 year.
20 years? Marvelous. You know, and all of us. But we are God's instruments. And as we model the process of forgiveness and that humbling experience, we teach that other person how to do the same. And as we get them to the point of being able to do as you've done, forgive, then you can begin to get them to the point of receiving. And you cannot truly receive Christ until you get rid of a lot of this knowledge that we've been holding over years. Now, I contend one of the reasons why we have so many fake, make-believe, deceived people in the congregations, I won't even say in the churches or Christians, is because they haven't forgiven. And when you begin to talk about these sensitive issues in your own little groups, watch the responses. Watch the emotions swell up. That's not forgiveness. If every time the topic comes up, you get tensed and edged, that's you haven't forgiven. You haven't turned loose. And if God is going to work through you in ministering to other people the way he can and desires, you have to be free instruments. Paul said, I take off every weight that what? So easily, what? So that I can do what? Run the race with patience. There'd be no obstructions in my ministering to folks. So anything about me that I need to shed or sharpen up, I need to do that. So I'll be ready for God's use. So I have to forgive. But most of us have a need to hold on.
This is like the eighth and ninth step of the eighth.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah. There's a book in the library that deals with this beautifully. And I think it calls the 10 steps or something. Mm-hmm. Just browse that. In the process of forgiveness, we need to be reminded, one, God forgave us by personally dealing with our offense. When the person says, yes, you guys have been ripping us off for the last 100 years, what should be your response?
We did. You're right. Yeah.
Don't fight it. It's true. No, not me. I didn't have no part of that. You're too sensitive.
No.
Yes, that's true. Now where do we go? You bent me out of shape and you attacked me the other day.
But I forgave you.
And if we're going to benefit from what God has to give, offer us, you have to do the same. Calm. Not all of you emotionalism. Not a counterattacking. But we have to turn loose that pride, which we all have at various times, some more than others, in order to get there. Most of us want to share the blame at least. Well, you guilty too. That's irrelevant. No. True. Right. Let's get that out of the way. The best way to deal with your adversaries is to do what with them?
Agree with them.
Agree with them. And especially if they are
right.
Now their motives might be wrong, but we'll deal with that later. But right now, we want to keep them in the process of moving towards hearing the word of God.
and the message of salvation. And so that's what we deal with.
God forgives us for his own sake as well as for ours. What does that mean? That's come from Romans 3:26 and Daniel 9:19, just for those who have all that stuff etched back in your brain power back there. But he forgave us for his own sake as well as for ours. What does that mean? How did God benefit from forgiving us?
Reestablish the relationship.
Huh?
Reestablish the relationship.
He can't have fellowship with us if he don't forgive us. He gonna be lonely in heaven if he don't forgive us. Be nobody to come back for if he don't forgive us. And he desired to have fellowship with us. He desired for us to be like him. He desired to give us good gifts. It pleases him to do good things for us. So for his own benefit, he forgave us. And then we benefit. So is it when we forgive others. We keep the door open for ministering to them. And ministering has a dual benefit. It helps me because it reinforces me. It helps me to see God at work, so I grow. It helps you, and that you come into the knowledge, or you be even more affirmed that what God is all about, and to be able to receive his blessing. We both benefit. So we forgive for our own benefit, and we forgive for the benefit of others, just like Christ did. God no longer treats us as offenders once we have been forgiven. Right? That's old stuff. That's gone. So, like some of you mothers, I won't pick on fathers right now, like some of you mothers, when you get ready to punish your kids, you bring up all kind of garbage from 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 weeks ago, even last year sometime. And you add it to, and the more you add on, the more what you get? The more unholy you get. And the more unholy you get, the more what happens to that kid? The more punishment is leveled out. We're supposed to forgive. And everybody, no, only one person here really know me. So you know I'm not an advocate of not. They know that I'm not an advocate of not punishing kids. But I am an advocate of not, you know, building a case against them and using old stuff. Once you deal with it, it should be over, done with, and forgotten. And that's what forgiveness is. And that's what keep the door for fellowship open. God doesn't treat us as an offender once he's forgiven us. God looks for opportunities to bless those he has forgiven. So when we encounter the hostility from people, I would be surprised if the majority of us in this room would find it easy to minister to members of the fill in the blank, what group? Come on.
Another.
Oh, let's get a little more specific.
Mormons.
Okay. Another blank.
Mormons.
Okay. Another group.
Klan.
That's the kind I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. See, now the Mormons and the Jehovah's Witness, we differ for lots of good scriptural reasons.
Right.
But most of the time, they don't inflict any harm on us. You know, they do some damage.
Yeah.
But not the same kind of damage. That group. Or
skinhead.
Who?
Skinhead.
Okay, now we're getting there. Gangs and on and on and on. But we are charged to look for opportunities to bless them. How can we bless the skinheads? Oh, come on. There's a real easy one. Not that easy. Most of us do it all the time.
Pray.
Show love regularly. We can pray from specifically. Okay.
Sir? Show love to them. Show love to them, right?
How? Huh? How?
Through prayer.
Hmm?
Through prayer.
Okay, we already got prayer. We want to add on to prayer now. You know, prayer is like faith. Faith without works is what?
Yeah.
And a lot of us are good at praying for situations and getting up and not doing anything about it. And so that prayer goes up like a vapor and it was gone. Because God knew the intent of your heart to begin with. He knew you didn't mean anything about it. You were just being spiritual. And he don't even not recognize that kind of stuff. So, in addition to prayer, what else can we do to minister to the skinheads?
Actions speak louder than words.
That's true. What kind of actions we are looking for?
We could try to be a good example. Not necessarily, or maybe necessarily, to go directly to them, but we could stop taking drugs. We could stop having corporate gangs. We could... thinking of all the examples that the society could, we could make a better society.
In that sense,
they wouldn't feel such a need to be in their group of skinheads.
Yeah. We can give Jesus more opportunity to live in and through us and manifest himself mm-hmm. to them.
Yeah. And of course we can go directly to them.
Yeah.
Along the lines that you said yesterday, find out what their needs are.
Find out what their needs are. And you know a lot of those skinheads, you know what they need? Somebody said it earlier.
A mother's laugh. You need to be heard.
Yes. I don't know if you've read the book. It's not a religious book, but in terms of Primal Stream, there's a lot to be said about that book and what it suggests. Because research shows that in with this from religious, theological type of data or the worldly data, that we are hurting society emotionally. We don't really know the benefit. We haven't experienced in that earlier childhood development what love is, parental love is. And the busier our society gets, the less and less that's available. When we used to have three and four parents to one kid on the block, we barely have one parent to the one kid on the block. Kids don't know. And you need people who are available to show them up. And how do you show up? There's a couple of ladies from the church that I attend, and in a rather quiet fashion, I was a little surprised when I found out exactly what they were doing. But on Saturday nights, they go to a particular section of town and they have food, hot dogs or beans or whatever in the trunk of the car. And they open up the trunk of the car and they start feeding the drug addicts on the street. And they witness to them. Now I'm not really sure I could do that. When I heard about it, I said, well, sometime when you get in a tight mind on Friday night, if you see you're not going to have no food, let me know and I'll cook something. But I really didn't say, let me know and I'll come out there. But when we talk about how can we minister to skinheads, we need to find active ways to show love, to model what Jesus is all about. But in order to do that, we have to look beyond their behavior and see their need, forgive their behavior, and then proceed. But as long as we focus on the behavior, we will have a cause, a reason, a justification for withholding the love that God has given us, or the love that is available to operate through us. But we have to see the need, and we have to forgive the obvious outward acting out behavior. And they act in that way because they're hurting. And when you talk to some of them, you will find out just how bad they're hurting. Now, I'm not saying don't send them to jail when they break your window and when they wreck your car and when they, you know, send them to jail. But on the way to jail, love them. You don't have to be hitting them in the side. Pat them on the shoulder and say, hey, you're going to get out someday. Let's talk about that. Hey, if you need somebody to visit you, you know, I'm available. In fact, I'm going to come anyway. I don't want to see you. That's all right. I just waited. Let you know that. But in order to be able to do that, we have to realize that there's a need for forgiveness and that I need to forgive them for their behavior. And that means I don't hold it against them. And then God forgave the same sin over and over and over. Romans, what is it? 12 and I haven't written out something. That's not one of my scripts. Yeah, Romans 12, 19, 20, 21. 70 times. That's a whole lot of times. So be it the skinhead, be it the angry black, be it the Ku Klux Klan, that's what we need to do. Now, mind you, we studied, and some of you may have studied too, because it's an international lesson, about Samson in Sunday school last Sunday morning. And Samson was a Nazarite, and he was a good guy, was he? No. He was?
Sort of.
Gotcha. No, he wasn't a good guy. God had grace and mercy upon him, the kind of grace and mercy we all hope he have on us. Samson ran after women like crazy. Samson was disobedient to his parents, you know, just blatantly. Samson did some other things that caused him to lose his strength and his power and caused his people to suffer. The Samson. It's the same Samson that you find in Hebrews chapter 11 that's listed among the greats. God had grace on him and mercy. But Samson, in the end, requested of God to give him, to restore his strength one more time so that he could avenge the people who put his eyes on. Not that he can make right all that he had done wrong, but that he can take vengeance out on the folks. Now it appears that what Samson was requesting was already in the game plan of the Almighty. So it appears that God honored his request of revenge. I take issue to that. Because God don't take revenge out. He don't have us praying, Lord, get him. You know, his great-great-grandfather was on the plantation in Louisiana, and my great-great-great-great-grandmother was down there, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, get him! God won't want that stuff. That's junk. Now, if I say love him, that's what God's all about. But if God decides they need to break your leg, it's broken. It has nothing to do with me. God had already, apparently had already decided that the Philistines was to be annihilated. And so when Samson made that request and he regained his strength and he pushed the pillars out and the building collapsed and all the leaders of the Philistines, the big guys and many of the little guys were destroyed. Samson died in that. How did he die? What physical state did he die in? And I'm not I did say physical, not spiritual, okay?
He was crushed by the rocks.
He was crushed by the rocks. And what physical state was his body in before he was crushed by the rocks?
Blind.
He was still blind. His sin caused him to be blind. He was still blind. But it appears that even though he had to pay for his sins, God forgave him. And so we find him listed among the greats in Hebrews. We need to forgive in that same order. And when we do that, we will find that we'll have to do it more than once or twice. Sometimes for exactly the same thing, from precisely the same person, which is one of the most difficult things to do. Boy, I told you before, and all you're doing is working up to beat his back because you told him before. But many times we have to go over it and over it. But we have to have a forgiving spirit in order to do that. In order to get to this witnessing level of forgiveness, most of us have to back up in our lives and go through the list. Moms, dads, uncles, aunts, neighbors, school teachers, brothers, sisters, you know, on down the line, and forgive. Clean up our truth. Our personal state. Whatever they've done, forgive. Now, one of the ways to reinforce forgiveness is to faithfully pray for the person that you forgive. It is really difficult to hold anger and hostility and hurt towards somebody and at the same time pray for God to strengthen, to heal, to bless their lives. And what we normally say in behavioral modification in terms of this new behavior is that the new behavior will begin to smother out the old behavior. Most of you who have learned to get out the bed on the right side of the bed and put your right leg in your pants before your left leg, if you've been doing that for 4 or 5 years and you get out one morning and you happen to put your left leg in first, what happens?
You fall down.
You fall over. But if you work at that, so you can build some consistency, then you don't fall. The principle is the same. We need to work at the new behavior. Work at it. Work at it until it becomes a part of you. Now, I know some of us have a problem with pretense. Is that true? If you really didn't mean it, then you should have done it anyway. You give your significant other a diamond ring, but you don't smile when you do it. And they give it back to you because you didn't mean it. You had the wrong attitude. Maybe that's one step in getting the right attitude. Keep the diamond ring. Thank them, praise them, reinforce them. And maybe next time you get another diamond ring, there'll be a smile with it. But I guarantee if you refuse that first one, you're not going to get no smile. So is it with forgiveness. We have to work at it sometimes. And work up to the point of allowing God to fully operate in our lives. Why? Because we are not God. He did it instantly. And in most cases, he doesn't do things instantly in our lives. Some of those old habits and old behaviors we have, for some of you, it took 15 years to get rid of it. Some 5. And then in a few of you, there was a miracle. You woke up one morning,
and I never smoked again. You woke up one morning, and I never told another lie. You woke up one morning, and I never ran after another woman. But for most people, it doesn't happen that fast. Forgiveness doesn't come automatically out. It's something that we have to work at.
Sir?
Yes.
Why didn't Samson forgive?
Why didn't Samson forgive? Yeah. Because Samson didn't have the heart of forgiveness. Samson was a self-righteous, undisciplined individual, like perhaps many of us. And if we look at Samson's life, we find that God had decided before Samson was born that he was going to be used in a particular way. So Samson didn't have any choice in that, but Samson was not cooperative. And there's a difference between God pushing us along and us walking along to do what God has us to do. Yeah. Some of us became lawyers because our parents said what? And others became lawyers out of choice. And when you look at the family dynamics and family relationships, it's a totally different picture between the one that became out of choice and that married their father who was a lawyer and became a lawyer, as opposed to the kid who dad had to, and he became a lawyer. No, Samson was not corrupted. He did not have the attitude that God wants us to have. And sometimes God will use us in spite of. There are a lot of people who, the scripture lets us know that a lot of our works will be saved, but the worker is lost because your heart wasn't right. A lot of ministers, a lot of Sunday school teachers, a lot of missionaries, a lot of evangelists, you know, the people who came forward and made a real commitment, got the transformation, they're going to make it. And God's going to look at you and say, depart from me, I know you're not. Why? Because your heart wasn't right. On the other hand, Paul say, irregardless of the reason why they preach the gospel is what? Going out. But it's not our job to divide who is and who isn't. That's God's job. It's our job to keep working, keep ministering. Keep serving. When we do not forgive folks for their wrong, we close the door to them hearing the gospel from us. Some people have asked a question, and I will give one answer. It's probably a lot of answers. Why is it that Sunday mornings is the most segregated time in America? And I contend, because of lack of forgiveness. Because some of the history on both sides. There's no that one bad guy in this thing on both sides. Many congregations are taking all kind of beautiful steps in order to draw in. But as one lady said in the session the other morning, in terms of white women, when they are caught by themselves in the presence of a black male, immediately fear. And fear causes us to act how? Most of the time irrational. So we say the wrong thing, we do the wrong thing, even though God knows I didn't mean it, but it's done. And reaction is there. Forgiveness stops us from reacting and allow us to take appropriate action. God did not give us a spirit of fear, but of what? Love. And security. Peace. So we have to take a look at ourselves and ask the question. No one else can answer it for you. We have to take a look at ourselves and ask the question, have I and do I on a continuous basis restore myself by forgiving?
sometimes we say, I will forgive him or her as soon as they do what? Come and ask for it. Matthew 11:25 mm-hmm. said, when they stand praying, forgive. If you have an ought against any, that what? Do what?
Go and be reconciled.
Go and be reconciled. And he didn't say, wait till they come to you. So you take the step. And when you go to ask for forgiveness to, and that's poor language is for my line of work. I'm in counseling and whatnot, and that's poor language. When I come to you, something is wrong between us and I want to clean it up, and I say, will you forgive me? You know what I'm doing? I'm throwing the ball right on you. And if you don't forgive me, you're going to hell. In essence, that's what I'm saying, because the scripture says, and we'll quote scripture, we may not be that blunt about it, but we'll quote scriptures and the message you get over. So you get angry with me. And so rather than a healing experience, I've added fire to experience. But what I really should be doing is say, look, I don't know what happened, but somehow things went wrong, and I'm sorry. And I want you to know that I'm sorry. I apologize for what went wrong. You leave the door open for another person to say me too, rather than putting them on the defensive. Will you forgive me? It's critical. I can't forgive people. Only God can do that. That's pretty spiritual, isn't it? It really is. Romans 12:19-20. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourself. Vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. Therefore, if thy enemy hunger, feed him. Forgive him. Don't hold it against him. If they thirsty, give them drink. You forgive. The only shovels that God has are you. The only pick and hoe and cultivators that God has, are us. So it has to come to us. Other person will not experience. Now, yes, I do believe that God is able, but that's not the way he set up the plan. He can just zap folks up and we end up with him. But that's not the way he planned. He planned it for us to be the instruments by which others come to know him in a very personal way. So we do it. I've already forgiven him 20 times for the same thing, and we talked about that. Forgive him. How many more times you got to go? I'll forgive him as soon as he changes. Colossians 3:13. Forbearing one another and forgiving one another, even as Christ forgave who? You. Did he forgive you after you changed or before you changed? Did you go to the cross before or after? And if we are Christ-like, that means what? We do things the way Christ did. We don't change the rules. We follow the blueprint that he has set. And it's a perfect blueprint. The schematic. You can't beat it. There are no flaws in it. So we don't need to revise it, dress it up. How can I forgive him when he doesn't deserve it? Romans 5:8. Again, may God commend his love towards us. In that while we were yet what?
Sinners.
Christ died for us. Repeatedly. I'll forgive him after he has blank for what he did. Who can fill in the blank? No. That would be beautiful.
Hey.
Yeah, after he's suffering for what he did. Proverbs 24:29. Say not, I will do so to him as he had done to me. I will render to the man according to his work. God said, don't say that. Because if he gives to us according to our works, where would we all stand today? We're in trouble. No. Not according to his words. Not what he deserves. But what he needs. You have to identify the need. Meet the need. That's what we're charged to do by God. And forgiveness is the vehicle by which we prepare ourselves in order to do what God instructs us to do.
Yeah, question here.
Yes, sir.
I had an interesting dilemma last summer when I met a former parishioner at a picnic someplace. And he came up to me and he said, now, I would like to have you forgive me for anything I might have done against you. And what should I tell the fellow? Because I didn't feel that I that he had done anything.
You asking me? Okay.
I mean, I
don't
feel
play
that
fair.
He had done anything.
I'm gonna tell you right off the bat. I don't play fair. No. And I would say to him, Lou, just what do you have in mind? What did you do to me that I was not aware of? That I need to be aware of so I can purge you in your mouth. Well, I do. If you're not aware of anything that you did, why are you going through these motions? There has to be some kind of what?
Guilt.
Otherwise, you wouldn't be doing this. Mm-hmm. So let's upfront. What's been going on?
I happen to know the fellow quite well, and I think he felt he had cancer. See, he felt that if he could only be forgiven of anything that he might have done, that he would get healing.
Okay.
But again,
he had a need. Yeah. One way of getting at that need is to clarify if it's legitimate, that repentance, if that's legitimate, or if it's generic. And if you haven't done anything, you don't need to worry. Now maybe he did have a bad attitude towards you. Maybe he didn't respect you. Maybe, you know, on down the line. But he needs to be able to say that.
Yeah.
And sometimes we as good Christians, we do in the field of counsel, we call it mind raping. We decide for you what it is you want to say to us. And we tell you, and you say, that's it. And it's all set. Cleaned up. You haven't accomplished a thing. Parents are very guilty of that. They tell the kids what they're thinking. Since I'm outnumbered, wives are very guilty of that. They tell their husbands what they're thinking, and then they answer them. That's sinful.